This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi folks, I'm Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast. You're listening to Every Step Along the Way and enjoy every second of it.
Hello everybody and welcome back to this super positive episode, Every Step Along the Way. Oh, what good feeling it is to win away, Mike.
Certainly is. All above the promotion train, isn't it now, Dan? I think we're on the only way is up from here, isn't it? I'm back in reality.
Yes, that's it. I did see somebody, didn't somebody ring in Radio Stoke for Praise and Grumble last week and mention the playoff push if we won every game? I mean, I'd like to think that I'm a positive person. I mean, that guy, he trumps me.
That's somebody we don't want that much positivity on this pod. So I'm glad he doesn't do this podcast because that'd just be sickening, and I'd be falling over myself to try and pull him over at various different points. So yeah, look, I'm all for positivity, but that's not going to be even remotely close. But on the flip side, do you know what's ridiculous about this season? As crap as it's felt for large parts, we could still end up having our highest finish ever, which, if that happens after all this, how ridiculous does that feel? It certainly feels ridiculous to me if we have our highest finish after all this.
Yeah, a high finish since we were sort of relegated in 2018. Yeah. To be, you think the money they've spent, the wage bills they've had in that time, the expectation that's been on them, and then you come to this season where they're complete reset, new squad, change the manager halfway through, sack the executive on the football side, and we could still end up, like I say, finishing higher in the league than we have done in what now we're getting on for what, six seasons? It's mad that we've been in this league now for six seasons.
It very quickly builds, though, doesn't it, really? I mean, you can see why teams get stuck down here for years and years. But I think what a crazy division. I mean, I know we spoke about how competitive this is, or for me, I still think how just a bunch of average clubs, everyone takes points off each other. I think whether you use average, whether you use competitive, I think we're saying the same thing. I think it's just terminology, but it is a nuts division. Anyone who can put together now, if you can get some formidable performance, let's say out of the next nine games, you go and get six or seven wins, anyone could be anywhere by the end of this season. It's utterly ridiculous. But what a great league. What a great thing to have.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that what you want from your football, though?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you much prefer that than the sort of monotonous repetitivity of the Premier League and the big six, if you like, and then becomes a big four and inevitably Manchester City then win the league.
Oh, 100%.
I would much rather have teams that can, on a good week, can beat anyone, and on a bad week, can lose to anyone in the league. And I think, like I say, I'd much rather that. It's a shame, isn't it, that winning the Championship comes with promotion to the Premier League. I'd much rather say, you know what, no, we'll win this league, we'll stay here, and we'll go again, and we'll win it again next year. Can we take the money? Yes, as well, please.
I was going to say, you can pick and choose whether you want to go up with it or not. I don't, you know what? I get it, because I've heard that a few times again recently. You know, it'll be great to get promoted, but the problem is then you're facing a season like, you know, potentially Sheffield, where you barely win a game every week. You know, let's be honest, as a football fan, yes, you want your team to be successful, obviously, and the whole point of getting out of this division is to go and play the big boys. But at the same time, from a fan, just purely take out anything about that, from a fan's enjoyment perspective, it is not fun, no matter what division you're in, seeing your team lose 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0 against Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal, which right now would rip us a new one. So I get that point of it as well. I know what you're saying. We're nowhere near there yet. We'll worry about that at the time.
Oh, God.
But I do understand that perspective as well. Is would you not rather have a few seasons of enjoying the football and seeing a settled club and then go from there rather than fluke a season and get absolutely annihilated every single week? I'd be honest, I think I'd rather stick around the championship for another year or two and see us win some games first.
Yeah, I think, especially after, you know, after the seasons that we have had. And, you know, it's not just the 6 years in the championship. You're talking the last couple in the Premier League. So that's sort of eight consecutive seasons of not winning very much. So, and rather than have it all crammed into one season, I'd take a top 10, a top six, fail in the playoffs, come back. Obviously, you can't guarantee it. That's the problem, isn't it? That's why we have been down the bottom. You can't guarantee that you are going to progress. But I think, looking at it, there's a reason why teams like Brentford have been able to go up and sort of stabilise themselves, even as possibly one of the real smaller clubs to ever be in the Premier League, let's be honest. Yet they've been able to get up and stabilise themselves because they did take their time at the top of the Championship, didn't they? They were nearly there, got there. And I think that sort of building and sort of the process that they got in place, and they just kept repeating it and going and going. When they did get to the Premier League, everything was sort of settled and in place, wasn't it? So I think there is definitely that, where if you do take a few seasons where you get there, you might actually be better to do it that way than to, like you say, fluke a season where everything goes for you, clear run of injuries. You've got some striker who's only ever scored six in a season, who all of a sudden bags you 30 goals out of nowhere, and then they come the following year, your reality hits home and everyone plays back to the normal levels, if you like.
Yeah, exactly. We'll worry about it when it comes around. I mean, maybe the changes in financial fair play or whatever you want to call it may allow you to have a better chance of staying up when you go up. Because I think at the minute, you could spend 100 million quid and be no better off, realistically, come the end of that season. So, yeah. But anyway,
like you say, we've got a long way to go to get there. Let's dissect 3 points before we start talking about 30 wins and going promoted. Right, Preston, mate, let's go back to last Saturday. 2 p.m, team sheet lands. Tyrese Campbell's up front on his own, and he's not 100% fit. Luke McNally's back in. We're playing five at the back. What were your thoughts? I think Manhoff seems to have a bit of a sort of a freeze role, sort of been calling for that. Juno, once he was playing off sort of Campbell and that. So what were your thoughts when you sort of seen that team?
You know what? I don't know what more we could really do at this point. I don't think Tyrese's best position is in that middle at all. I don't think that's where he should be playing. But when you look at the bench, you know, I mean, what other choice have we got? I think Wesley clearly just isn't mobile enough, and his touch is shocking. So he's never going to get ahead of Tyrese, who, whether you like him or not, I know a lot of people don't, but like whether you like him or not, he can still finish given half a chance. I appreciate he's not been prolific, but all I say in the answer to the question is, okay, compare him against who? Again, Vidigal isn't that type of player who can play in the middle. He's going to be on probably the left-hand side. That's where we've seen some of his best stuff. And other than that, who else we've got? Hak Sabanovic, he's no striker for me. Lloris, again, you wouldn't play any of them down the middle. So realistically, all he's probably done is, right, okay, who's most likely, who's the better finisher out of all of the above? And Tyrese's name probably just came up, and it was quite a simple thing. So I'd say that made sense to me, just for if the fact that Ennis isn't fit. The rest of the team, Dan, if I'm honest with you, I think that worked quite well for me. I think, you know, Luke Minnelli and Michael Rose have been great together. So for me, I didn't have any major problems with that team. And one thing I will say, thank God the Stoke City Twitter feed have finally stopped pointing in number order. The amount of confusion that bloody thing caused for everyone, and everyone was having a headache about formations. Oh my word, I was so happy.
I think confused a lot, confused the opposition, confused. I think the team sheet goes in number order. Yes, do it.
whatever it takes. But yeah, again, I don't know what more we could have done. Like we said, we had a lot of games. Was it 3 games in a week? To come out of that with, you know, 2 wins out of that, I think is really good going. Jordan Thompson obviously not coming back in. That's one we did predict. I kind of understand that. Again, I still, like I said to you, Louis, I still think we needed that cover in the middle. Realistically, so I do understand his decisions. I don't think many people had too many bad things to say about the lineup overall, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, like I say, that there wasn't really much to do. I think he was matching Preston up, wasn't he, going 5 at the back? I think that was the whole point of sticking the extra man in there. So, first half wise, both teams seemed to be feeling each other out, didn't they? And I think Stoke sort of tried to get Preston, tried to take them off their natural game. I think they like to sit a bit deeper, don't they, and invite teams on. I think Stoke sort of did that themselves and were like, well, no, you can have the ball. You can come out to us. And I don't think Preston were too happy with that. I mean, half-time, it just shows just how well we did defend in the first half and how limited Preston were, that their XG at half-time was 0.01.
Yeah, shocking for a home team. I mean, even we're not that bad.
Yeah, so they literally had, I think there was one effort that was blocked and it was like long range. That is all they had. And we, like I say, we did to them what so many teams have come and done to Stoke, isn't it? And that you stay compact, you stay, you keep your shape, and you make the home side come out when they really did, that's not the strength. And like I say, they couldn't really create. Into the second half, I think we defended again. We carried on defending really well, kept our shape really well. And they again, they had no chances at all, did they? I think they had was it what the whole match? I think they had 4 shots.
Yeah, 2 on target it was.
4 shots, yeah. 2 on target, and no corners in the whole game.
How unusual is that? No corners as a home team.
Their XG for the whole game was 0.12. It's like, I know you sort of battle XG and all that, but that just shows that they had no opportunities. And that can be the goalkeeper, the defence, and the midfield. And probably, you know, even the front players there, you know, that's a team effort to reduce the home side to that little creativity. That comes from, starts at the front and works its way backwards, doesn't it? Because you can't have that without everybody pulling the weight.
Yeah, of course it does. It's not by accident. I mean, yeah, okay, every team has an off day. I understand that. But you're spot on. They're the home team. They had more possession, but clearly didn't have enough quality to do anything with us. I mean, we've stood our ground. We, as you said, we've matched them up. And simply on the day, they, you know, yeah, okay, they scored, and that was, you know, from a bit of maybe a lack of concentration at that near post, and in fairness, a good header. So, you know, you've got to give them some credit for that. But you know, people go, oh, it's an own goal for the first one, for example, Dan. And I'm like, look, if he doesn't put his own net, was it Josh Loren? I think it was right next to him. Josh puts it in, so it's irrelevant. It was a good bit of work from Gooch. You're right. You know, he was great. Gooch was. He really. I mean, when we think about, you know, again, the 5 at the back, and it could have been Thompson or it could have been Gooch. And I think that's what happens when you go 5 at the back. You've gonna have Gooch in that situation. I think his liveliness, his pace, he's got a decent cross on him as well. I think it was absolutely the right decision to make in that sense. But I'm with you, like, look, how many times do we win games with less possession? It's happened so many times when we've done that. You know, less possession, less passes. Can't argue with that. I think, as you said, the fact they had 0 corners, that's really unusual for any home team. And I just think we got absolutely every single point that we deserved from that. On another day, like, Preston don't score a goal for me. They did take that one chance and that was it. So all credit to, you know, Schumacher for setting his team out in that way. Clearly had, you know, done the homework going into the match. And I know you might want to dissect the goals in a bit more detail, but good to see Luke McNally on the score sheet as well, Dan. You know, he's someone who's clearly not been gained into the positions, which naturally he wouldn't do other than set pieces. And yeah, a little bit fortuitous. I'm not sure how much he knew. He just kind of reacted, you know, swung his leg out and just saw what happened, and in off the post it goes. But if we wouldn't have won that, it would have been an absolute travesty, because Preston were extremely poor, not just bad, extremely poor, and did not deserve anything out of that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I mentioned that to say the first goal there. You're right in that Loren, you know, he taps that in, doesn't he? If the defender doesn't put it through his own net, then he does it for him.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's interesting. I've seen McNally getting sort of a groove for this, isn't he? He scored the winning goal against Sunderland, you know, 2-1 win. And now he's got a nice late goal here at Preston. Yeah, I know the Sunderland one was a bit earlier on. But yeah, two goals he scored now for Stoke, both 2-1 wins. Both, like I say, the deciding goal as well. I mean, I'd like him to describe the finish.
I don't know what it was.
I mean, apart from being a great assist from Liam Lindsay, who you could see just how gutted he was, they'd set that goal up, didn't you? And obviously, you know, heading straight to McNally. But it sort of, I'd sort of watch it back all the time, like it hit his knee, it sort of rolled down onto his foot, gone forward at the post, and then just rolled across the line. I mean, you can see like defenders and goalkeepers just watching this ball. It's one of them, isn't it? It hits the post, and they go, oh, that's in. And then they see it like a second later, and like, it's still not in. Oh, I might be able to get this, and then, oh no, it's gone in now. So yeah, I mean, do you know what? We have got a bit of luck in both them goals. The first one, I do think Laurent tapped it in. If he doesn't clear it on another day, a defender can clear that, whether it's away from goal, spoon it over the bar or whatever. But we've deserved that. I think there's not been too many times this season when we've had significant luck. And that was, but, you know, the performance deserved the luck, I believe. You know, that's sort of my opinion of it. I thought we, yep, like we've sort of said before, we've strangled their play, made them feel uncomfortable now that, you know, and how they were going about the game, and we took advantage of it. We played to our strengths and the opposition's weaknesses all in one.
Well, we were talking about the you know, the fight from this team, weren't we, a few weeks ago, or the lack of, if you like. You know, did we have the personalities, yeah, in the door and all that? And I really do think that the, you know, that sitting down conversation that the team have clearly had, you know, the likes of John Walters and whatnot. I mean, you talk about impacts that people have, and I think one of the biggest impacts has actually been off the pitch with Johnny Walters. I think he's at least said, right, you know, this is how it is. This is what it means. As we all know, those types of conversations have happened. I don't think you can underestimate someone who's got that impact. And I must admit, when it came in, I was like, oh, this is a great PR stunt for Stoke. And I think, yeah, there was definitely an element of that, of course. But at the same time, like, good on Johnny Walters. And you know what? Good on the players as well, because clearly they've had a bit of a head wobble and they've understood where they are. No delusions of grandeur about, oh, I'm this type of player, I'm that type of player. The fact is, you've been a contribution factor to a club being unsuccessful this season. And it takes personalities to sometimes go, Luke, yeah, we messed up. We do need to do better, and we're going to do better. And you know what? In the last 3 weeks, it's exactly what they've done. So if they can keep that going, it shows we do have the personalities in the door, and we just need now to, you know, try and squeeze a few points out of some difficult games coming up. But also, there's a lot of winnable games. And before you know it, if everything goes to plan, you know, thoughts of relegation could be a long way off, and you know, in a few weeks' time. So, yeah, good on the players and good on the likes of Johnny Walters and co. As much as John Coates has obviously made some mistakes, there's no doubt about that. It's a shame he'd come maybe a little bit late, but it looks like the Ricky Martin sacking was probably one of the best decisions he's made in a while.
Yeah, I think you're right. And like I say, it was a very professional display. Professional is probably the word I'd best describe it. And it's like you say there, it's going to give them great confidence boost now going into what is still nine vital games. But we've given ourselves, more than a fighting chance. And I think this team now, looking at the fixtures they've got, I mean, I've, you know, sort of said earlier in the week, I think this Norwich game on Saturday could potentially be the most difficult match we'll face this season. But I still don't think we'll come out of it with nothing. I still think we'll get positive results. And I think that mindset and that belief, these three wins in the last six will just give them now like an understanding and a belief that they can go on and get results in any game. And even if they have a setback or they have a couple of setbacks, I still think that now they've had this sort of reinforced now. Well, actually, yeah, we still are a good side. So they can go out and do it, do you know what I mean? Get a good, you know, put a good performance in and hopefully get the right results, enough results to keep us up. And then in the summer, everyone resets back to zero and they can really, you know, get their head screwed on for something more positive going forward. Just one thing I'll just touch on the Preston goal. There's a few culprits there, and there's a few people who could possibly be doing their job a bit better. I think the space, I mean, the cross comes in for the right-hand side. Is it fair to say that, you know, they could get closer and maybe try and stop that coming from source, if you like? You know, get an extra body over there, or, you know, hoovering that over there, get a bit tighter and stop the cross. When it comes in, it sort of dissected a gap between two centre-halves. You know, the Garros Miach is sort of drifted in between there. So he's got good movement, fair play to him. You know, he's done his bit. Should we have followed him? Should one of the centre-halves have picked him up? And then Everson as well, as good as he's been recently, should he be getting beaten there at his near post? I think, you know, I don't want to put the downer on it, but I think you just need to look at it. You know, there's three people there who probably think, yeah, maybe could have done. You know, three or four people who maybe could have done something a bit better within that moment. But in the whole, yeah, this is the championship. Things aren't going to be perfect, are they? You are going to have the moments and things in game that you don't do perfectly.
Exactly.
Right, I mean, is there anything else you want to sort of talk about on the trip to Deepdale, mate?
No, I'm just glad we've got the result out of it. I think, you know, we all went there knowing how good Preston can be, and I think we've caught them on a good day. We've done some good tactics. You know, the team have fought, and I mean, my dad used the word bonus points there. It's borderline, isn't it? Is that class as a bonus way? I mean, you got to look at them this season. I'm not sure if I maybe class it as bonus. It's a tricky one. Either way, I'd say it's one that a good portion of us maybe wouldn't have had us to win that one, based on Preston's normal form and, you know, where they were. I mean, 3 points, I think, would have put them very, very close to the playoffs. So they were fighting for something. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's bonus points, but yeah, I think what this really does, as you've just said, it changes mindset again. You go to Norwich, which we'll obviously talk about, but you go into that with confidence again. You can't have enough confidence, especially how much we've lacked all season. So, no, really good, solid performance. Well done on Shuey, well done on the players. And let's just keep it up. Let's not make these, you know, these situations, let's not go and end up losing to a Swansea or a Plymouth now. You know, it's fine, you know, picking up these extra wins against the likes of Preston, but don't cock it up on the rest. Like, let's just hope we can get enough now to push away forward.
Yeah. So let's use this as something to build on. I think we haven't had enough times, have we, where we've had opportunities to build momentum and we just haven't taken it. And that goes back for a few years now, let's be fair. But yeah, I think, obviously, we spoke to Oliver, didn't we? Let's say Preston fan before the game. So let's catch up with him now and hear his thoughts on the match itself.
Hello to Every Step Along the Way podcast. My name's Ollie from the Butter Pie podcast, and unfortunately I've been asked to do a post-match reaction to the game. I thought we were very, very poor all game, and Stoke thoroughly deserved the 3 points at Deepdale. I thought Lyndon Gooch especially had a fantastic game. He really exploited Alan Brown, who's not naturally a right wing back, showed his ability, and he was the main threat for Stoke. And Another one was Tyrese Campbell. I was quite impressed, albeit he hadn't got his shooting boots on because he was quite poor in front of goal. But getting in between our defenders and creating space for others, I thought it was superb. But yeah, I think this probably could be the start of Stoke's resurgence. I could never see him going down this season. And I thought they were a real good footballing side. And to be fair, you probably deserve to be nowhere near the bottom three. But yeah, I think you'll do well. I think we'll definitely see you next season because we ain't going anywhere else either because we were absolutely terrible. Obviously, you know, we had a spark of luck with Mads putting it in for Osmanic where, you know, you've got a maverick like Mads who's able to make something out of nothing. But we need a little bit more than just one moment of magic in the game. And Stoke was all over us for the majority of it. So it was a well-deserved win for Stoke. And I do hope that you manage to turn it around this season because, you know, going to the Bet365 is always a good away day. So, cheers, lads. And I guess I hope I'll see you next season. Cheers.
Just it. Cheers for that, Oliver. Yes, I think, you know, like I say, unfortunately for you, you were the one team that we had a bit of good luck against. But yeah, good luck for the rest of the season up at Deepdale. Man of the match, Mike, who is your choice for man of the match?
It's Lyndon Gooch for me, mate.
Well, yes, he got 83% of our vote. A massive, massive overall winner. Luke McNally was second with 3%. And then Daniel Everson and Ben Wilmot were joint third with 1%. Yeah, Lyndon Gooch, that's his sixth man of the match this season. Only the sort of incredible stats that Vouterberg has been posting has seen him get more. A couple of funny ones. Liam Lindsay, bracket great assist. Jamie Latham put that one on. And the away end. Yeah, that was put on as well by Craig Harold. So, yeah, they got a few votes as well. I thought, yeah, the fans were fantastic. We had 3,000-plus following again. Yeah, can't fault Stoke fans at all, you know, especially if you're travelling away. Player of the season standing. So, Berger, 614 points. Realistically, I don't think anyone's catching him because Juno is 244 points back in second on 370. Lyndon Gooch has 351. Luke McNally has 291. And fifth place with 268 points. Diana Hoover.
Yeah, you need to stop that.
Just thought I'd wind you up a bit more. He's in the top five in our player of the season standings. But there you go. Voted for by the fans, mate. Voted for by the fans.
Every week you're bloody sucking up to him.
Just winding you up, that's all. Right. Yes. Well played, those lot. And yes, let's get into the news. So, under-18s, mate, last week, they've had a busy week. Our youth teams have, actually, though. 2-1 home loss to Wolves last Saturday. So, goal in each half, put Wolves 2-1 up. There was an own goal, give us a bit of hope with 12 minutes to go, but we were unable to get anything from that match. And this week, they were away at Newcastle, 11 a.m. kickoff on Saturday at Newcastle's Academy. Now, the under-21s, last week they lost 5-1 last Friday night away at Southampton. Will Smith scored in the second half. That was the Stoke goal. And in midweek, Ryan Shawcross was in charge as we took a team to Stone Old Elanians. And we came out 3-2 victors in a game that was topsy-turvy. Staff Cup, Senior Cup quarter-final, played at Clayton Wood. So Lispieth given an early lead. Then Stone Old Elanians. Stone Old Elanians came back and went 2-1 up, and then there was an own goal drew level, and then Kiki Jeffers was fouled in injury time, picked himself up off the ground, scored the penalty to take us through to a semi-final away at Leek. That's being played next Tuesday, 19th, 7:45 kickoff. Before then, we've got a trip to Derby on Friday, 7 p.m. kickoff for that one. So, yeah, plenty of games coming thick and fast for the under-21s. Now, the women. Last week, they went away to Fylde, and Royston Cavell and a debut goal for Maya Heath saw them get a 2-1 win away at Fylde. And then they backed that up with a 2-0 home victory over Derby on Wednesday night. Hyder Logan and Saffron Jordan with the goals there in the first half, procuring the points. This week, we start what is a double header against Burnley. So we are at home at the Emery Stadium this Sunday, 2 p.m. kickoff. It's fourth versus third in the league. Next Sunday, we travel away to Burnley. Obviously, these games have been rearranged due to the weather. But yeah, sort of top of the table clash there for the women. They're up into fourth in the league. Well done to them. So, Mike, news-wise, Bae-Jun Ho. Now, this is going to divide opinion. There is very much talk of him being called up for South Korea's under-23 side. Fantastic news. Recognition for a quality young player we've brought into the club and developed. The only problem being, it's for the Olympics, so he will miss the end of pre-season and I believe the start of next season. But first of all, they've got to qualify for those Olympics, and the qualifiers mean he will miss our final three league games of the season. Now, you might hear us say, that is a no-brainer situation. He's not going. We need him more, unless we're safe. Sorry, Bae, you're going to have to stay here. Throw in this caveat that obviously male South Koreans have to do 2 years, 18 months to 2 years military service, which starts, I think the latest it can start is the age of 28. If he gets a medal at the Olympics, he gets exemption from doing that, which I know is something Son at Tottenham managed to do by winning the Asia Games. So for him, he is looking at up to 2 years in the South Korean military before he turns 30, whilst he's in his football career. And this is a way, him going to play there is a way of him being exempt. Now, if Stoke saying no, he can't play in the qualifiers, chances are he's probably not going to play in the actual tournament itself. For me, as much as he may enjoy playing for Stoke, as much as he may respect Stoke as a club, I still think if I was him, and this could possibly get me exempt from something like that, that's going to disrupt his footballing career and something that he's really getting on with in his life. I don't think I personally would be able to. I'd turn around to a club and say, no, sorry, I'm going. if this is a possibility of me getting out of that, or being exempt from it, should I say, rather than just weaselly way out of it, if you like, getting an exemption, so you'd have to do it, then yeah, I'm going. And I think Stoke might just have to suck it up on this one.
I think we do. And at the end of the day, he misses the last three games, fine. But at that point, we shouldn't be fighting relegation. I'd be very concerned if we're going into the last three games and we're worried about being relegated. So I agree with you, Dan. I think you've got to look at the bigger picture. If he stays with us for the next, who knows? Maybe we'll be successful. We'll get through this season and we'll be able to do well next season. Before you know it, we could be somewhere better. And if that is the case, do you really then want to lose him for a couple of years while he's playing? Obviously, he's playing. Do you want to lose him for a couple of years while he's in the forces, and then you've got him? You haven't got him for the most crucial parts. I agree with you. I think it's a no-brainer for me. Let him go and do this tournament. If he can get himself an exemption as part of that, fantastic. Everyone wins, because I think Jean Noah, he's probably. I'm sure he loves his country, and I'm sure he'd probably respectfully do his service and all that side of things. But like you just pointed out, he's got a career in British football, worth millions if you do really well as a player. It's just everything's in your favour by being a footballer in this country. So I don't think he'll want to have the service if he can help it either. So yeah. Let him go. Let's get ourselves safe well before that point. And a player of his quality, I suppose the good thing is, while yes, okay, he might miss a little bit of our preseason and stuff like that, I think he's got enough quality where, if he comes back into the fold, he'll probably nestle in quite nicely. And it's not like we're going to go out and necessarily find his replacement. He's not going to miss half a season. So, let it happen. Just accept it and move on.
Yeah, I think as well that if we did stop him going, no, sorry, we need you, our needs come first, whatever, you got to think then, is he going to have people, is he going to have people in South Korea saying to him, well, you know, these are blocking your international career. So is he then thinking that why is it Stoke? Is he not going to get the opportunity to then play for his national side? Is he thinking that if he's not in the national side, he's not going to have further opportunities, Olympic Games, Asia Games, World Cups, whatever, where he can again get himself exempt from this, like I say, because he's back to his 28. So he could well, if Stoke stop him now, it may well be that it turns a screw and stuff. He say, actually, I don't think I want to be here because in the long run, you are going to may really hinder me. I need someone who's a bit more understanding of the situation I'm in.
Yeah.
And so I think Stoke, I say, I don't think we will see him here for much longer if we did stop him going as well. So yeah, for me, you've got to go let him play. More than anything, I say it's such an honour to represent your country as well, isn't it? And it's been nice to be sitting there watching. Well, we've got something to watch in the Olympics because we don't even have a team, do we? So we can all be South Korean when the football's on.
Absolutely, yeah. And we're getting a nice little following of obviously, you know, Korean fans, aren't we? I've noticed at the stadium a lot. So yeah, it'll be good. Like, we've all seen as well. Let's be honest, from a commercial perspective, I'm sure Stoke want him at the club from a commercial perspective. Because if you do get yourself into the Premier League, you know, you've seen what it's been like for Son at Spurs and stuff like that. You know, from that sense, it's a potential gold, you know, gold mine really for the club as well in terms of like attracting international fans. So yeah, it works in everyone's favour, doesn't it?
If he really kicks off next season and really, you know, gets himself, you know, 10 goals, 10 assists, really, you know, starts week in, week out, which I really think he could do, you know, then I think it's pretty obvious where we'll be going on a pre-season tour the following year.
Yeah.
And like you say, stuff like that, especially when we are now leads us perfectly into the new financial rules. And it could, it, you know, this is sort of something that's come out this week into the Premier League have sort of been, you know, we were hoping they would come up with a plan and come up with a vote, you know, they'd have a vote and approve a offering to the DFL. And they were looking at 900 million to £1 billion spread over the next TV deal. Surprise, surprise, they couldn't. They said, yeah, we think that thing's about right, but they couldn't decide which clubs it would come from and who would be paying how much at what ratio. So no deal got agreed. Didn't even have a vote because they couldn't get there. So, yeah, everyone sort of sat in that room, obviously, and said, yeah, we think that's about right, but we think that you should be paying it, not us. And, yeah, so now, as it happens, with the financial regulator coming in quite soon, it's going to be a sticky situation for the Premier League if they don't get the finger out, in my opinion, because what they want to do will not be considered by the financial regulator. They will literally just tell them. And it probably won't be pretty from what they're, you know, from their eyes.
Also, they've got to understand, especially like the, you know, the players and everyone associated with that club, without the likes of the Championship and League One, League Two, and all the whole football pyramid, without that, those players are not there. Those clubs are probably not up there. Like, the players have to come from somewhere, and you know, a lot of them start out in academies and stuff like that. If you don't invest in, let's be honest, it's a drop in the ocean to these clubs. It's bloody nothing. Like, if they don't invest in clubs, yeah, okay, they might be riding the wave at the minute and, you know, loads and loads of money in the clubs, but if you just see academies and bits like that closing all over the place because clubs can't afford to run them anymore, longer term for them clubs and longer term for football in general, it's going to have an impact on everyone. So stop being greedy. I mean, across all them clubs, it's nothing. And yes, I agree in some respects. Man City's, Man United's, Arsenal's, Chelsea's. Yeah, they should pick up bigger part of the bill. Why should they, you know, why should they get the same bill as, say, a Bournemouth? You know what I mean? Or a Luton or whatever. They should pay a good chunk of that because they're bloody milk enough money out of the other clubs and Champions League and everything like that. Honestly, Dan, it's a drop in the ocean. So like you said, hurry up and agree to a deal because this regulator comes in and you're going to be screwed even more then.
Do you know the real annoying part is, though, that the increase that they're asking for, really, it's not even money that they've currently got. So when these new TV deals come out, obviously, as it always happens, the Premier League's money and the income is going to go up from the TV deals.
Yeah.
But if they offset, if they give the EFL what they're asking for, you know, what they're sort of asking, you know, demanding, if you like, to be satisfied, then it still wouldn't be the same as the gap. Like, you know, the increase would cover the increase in what they're asking for. So it's not even as if they're going to lower what they've currently. They'll still end up with more money than they've currently got. It's like it's not money they're currently spending. They just want to keep that so they can spend it on wages, basically, to increase more wages. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, you've heard us waffle on a bit about it. How about we now listen to somebody who actually knows the stuff? I already have. This is fourth visit now to the podcast.
I think so. I think it's fourth. Yes.
Yeah. Well, here is the price of football finance guru, Kieran Maguire.
There's two main issues arising from the latest revelations coming from the Premier League. The first is that Premier League clubs, and I suspect we will see EFL Championship clubs follow this in due course, are going to change the way that the cost control system, which, you know, we traditionally call financial fair play, they then called it profitability and sustainability rules, and heaven knows what they're going to call the next one, is going to be a sort of wage cap, in the sense that if you take the total money generated by the club from ticket sales, from broadcasting deal, from sponsorship and commercial partnerships, and also you can add on to that your player sale profits, which will probably be averaged over a 3-year period. So you say, well, that's the total money coming in. And then we're going to say we're going to have a squad cost cap in relation to that. And what the situation will be is that if you're playing in a UEFA competition, for every £100 of money coming in to the club, you'll be able to spend 70 on player wages, not back office stuff, but player wages, transfer fee amortisation. Won't go into that here, it's nerdy stuff. Agents fees. So that effectively gives you your total costs of employing the players. So in the UEFA clubs, you can spend no more than £70 for each 100 comes in. If you're not in a UEFA competition and therefore you don't have the benefits of that broadcast deal and those additional matches, you'll be allowed to spend £85. Now, my understanding is that the Premier League is saying to the EFL that you've got to replicate that in the Championship before they give any money. And what the Premier League's trying to force through, and I think this will cause a big kickback, is that Championship clubs should be limited to 70%, but those clubs just relegated from the Premier League, also potentially in receipt of parachute payments, they'll be able to keep their 85% for a year or two. So where does that leave Stoke? Well, Stoke has reasonable revenue streams. We know Stoke is not a particularly wealthy area. If you look at the demographic of the fan base, so then, you know, Stoke fans are not used to paying sky-high prices to watch the team, so matchday income is limited. Commercial deals tend to be quite good at Stoke because of the close links with Bet365. And the broadcast deal is the same as what's received by every other club in the division. So I don't think it will make a significant difference. It might give Stoke a slight advantage over clubs such as Preston and Millwall, who get lower crowds and don't tend to have the benefit of a fairly generous sponsorship arrangement with commercial partners. So that's where we are in terms of cost control. The other issue is there going to be any more money coming down from the Premier League? There's good news and there's bad news. It's more bad than good. The Premier League clubs have sort of reluctantly agreed that they're going to give probably in the region of an additional £160 million a year to the clubs in the EFL. Now, that's got to be split between 72 clubs. effort, 80% of that will go to clubs in the Championship. So that's the good bit. The problem within the Premier League is they can't decide how they're going to divvy up that £160 million themselves. The sneaky six, the Super League charlatans, the scumbags who have got no interest in football and just see it as another part of the entertainment industry from whom they want to make money. They say, well, if we take 160 million, we divide that by 20 clubs, 8 million a club. The smaller clubs, the likes of, you know, Crystal Palace, for example, they're saying, well, hold on, you know, Manchester United, Manchester City, they already make four or five times as much money as clubs such as Palace or Bournemouth or Wolves or Brighton or whoever it's going to be. So surely it should be linked to the success of those clubs, and those with the broadest shoulders should pay more. And, you know, it's all become a bit unedifying. You've got civil war. You've got 10 clubs in favour of the distribution model of splitting it. You've got 10 clubs against. You've got billionaires arguing with multimillionaires, and they're all making themselves out to be the innocent party in all this. And as a result of that, it's been a complete shambles. No progress has been made. The EFL, the problem that the EFL has got is that it's got no negotiating power. If it says, well, we're not happy with what you do, what can it do? The only bullet in the EFL gun is that it's insisting that two-legged semi-finals in the Carabao Cup are retained. You know, they would probably go if the EFL agreed, or rather the EFL agreed to the PL distribution as part of a much broader package. So that's where we stand. I don't think any of it is any better, but it's not necessarily any worse for a club such as Stoke. It's shambolic. It shows that everybody's acting in their own self-interest, which to a certain extent is to be expected. They're competing clubs after all. But if anybody tells you that the Premier League is part of the broader financial family, broader football family, they're talking out of their backsides.
Cheers for that, Kieran. I think he obviously knows his stuff, Mark, and we obviously had this discussion after listening to what he'd said. So we sort of knew our stuff to a certain degree, didn't we?
It's interesting to know that from a Stoke perspective, the whole kind of, you know, the thoughts around was it 70-80%. Be interesting to see how much of an impact that is. Obviously, I know that the club are pretty good in terms of their like commercial side of things, like the sponsorships, obviously with Bet365, like he's mentioned. You know, the money we make from the, you know, the Waddington Suites and all the hospitality stuff. I think we're very much up there. I swear I saw or heard Simon King say that we were pretty much top of the tree for that. I could be wrong on that, but I think we were very good. So I do think we are, you know, maximising our efforts. But you can. This is where even things like, you know, the fan zone will come in future times. You know, that's going to be revenue coming into the club. So all these things, as good as they are for fans, it's going to be good for the revenue of the club as well. So if it does go down that, you know, that 70-80% type route, then the more money that comes into the club from whichever direction, the better. The only thing that you might need to consider, does that mean that we could see an increase in the season ticket prices for the first time? I don't think they'll want to. I think the actual money that we'd probably make in comparison to the impact, I think they want to get to the 20 year mark, I think, don't they? They love that as a headline. 20 years of the same prices like that. I mean, no other club's done that, I'm sure. So, but if they turn around and go, look, if we put it up by 20 quid for every season ticket, we'll get another million quid or whatever it equates to. I wonder how much backlash there'd be if it was something minimal in terms of an increase. But it's just, that's what I'm thinking. I'm just thinking any avenue that could bring more money in is going to benefit us. So it's kind of rocking a hard place for them a little bit. What do they do?
It's a bit weird, isn't it? I mean, if you say 20 quid, say they sell 15,000 season tickets and they put them up 20 quid, then that's £300,000. I mean, what's that, 6 grand a week over the course of a year? not...
It's not massive, is it?
No. And you have to think as well, how many people do you potentially lose season ticket holders by putting up... As daft as it might seem, is with that 20 quid, some, you know, there will be people who will go, I'm not having one of them. If their season ticket's 300 quid, you've then got to sell 15 to make up, or 16 to make up the one that's just dropped off as well. So, yeah, it's
without a successful team, you're never going to do that either.
No, I think as well that if these financial rules come in, I think there needs to be some sort of price cap being coming in. If you've got it in the Premier League, why is there not anything in the Championship? And you know, there needs to be some sort of cap at each level of what people can charge. And I think then, because you will see, you know, owners trying to exploit fans under the banner of, I'm not saying that that's what you're thinking our owners would do, but there are plenty of rogue owners out there who, I mean, look at the prices that Sheffield Wednesday charge their fans at the minute. It's nearly, some games nearly 50 quid in the bottom end of the Championship.
Coventry, Leeds. Coventry,
yeah. And it's like, their owners will say, well, we need this to run the club. And I think that's what they'll say. And football fans being football fans, plenty of them will swallow it because it's like, well, you need us to be competitive, so we need to get as much money as we can in. This is the only way we can do it in this league. When actually, like you say, we just wait to start there. It's probably a drop in the ocean compared to the actual overall income of the club. But the way they'll do it, you know, they'll word it in a way that you think, oh, actually, yeah, we need to... We have to make sure, you know, that we're getting every penny in, because every, you know, it all counts towards making sure we're within the rules and the guidelines.
Interesting. We'll keep an eye on it, and we'll, if we can get Kieran on for, you know, when it's all done and announced, we can get Kieran on for a proper time. We will. I'm sure everyone can appreciate that he's really bloody busy. He's got a personal life as well as a working life, so we really appreciate obviously Kieran giving us that time to get that across. And if we can get him back on when all this is announced, we will do. But worst case, you know, we can always ask questions and get some sound bites and stitch them all together and give them to you. So we'll do what we can.
Yeah, brilliant. Let's get into Norwich City at home.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So then, Stoke welcome Norwich to the Bet365 Stadium this Saturday. The teams have met 60 times. 21 wins, 21 defeats and 18 draws previously. At home, though, Stoke have played Norwich 31 times, 17 wins, 8 draws and just the 6 defeats. In recent times, Stoke have drawn 2 and lost 4 of the last 6 meetings. Both draws, though, were at home. So, yeah, not a great recent record against Norwich. Since 1997, though, Stoke have lost only 2 of 13 home games versus the team from Carrow Road, 7 victories and 4 defeats in that time. Stephen Schumacher's record against both David Wagner and Norwich City is the same, and it's a good one. Listen to this. One match, one meeting with Norwich, and it was David Wagner's Norwich in September. He played a 3-4-2-1 formation as Plymouth manager at Home Park, and they won 6-2. So I'll take a bit of that, please, Mr. Schumacher, if we can get that going again. That incidentally was 7 days after Stoke had lost to Norwich under Alex Neil. David Wagner's record at Stoke, played 5 matches, 1 win, 2 draws, 2 defeats. Now, Norwich's win
Norwich's win at Carrow Road in September was the only win for Wagner versus Stoke. In three visits to the Bet365 Stadium, to have his teams have yet to score a goal. So, yeah, he's twice with Huddersfield and then the goalless draw with Norwich. Yeah, so he's yet to score a goal in three trips to the Bet365 Stadium. Let's make that four, Stoke. Come on. Stoke's home record, they are 19th in the home table, 22 points. Only two of the last 12 Stoke home games have had both teams to score. And the last five matches has Stoke, I've got picked up 6 points to put them 15th in the form table. Norwich's away record, now this might surprise you. They have 17 points and are 19th in the away table, right the way down the bottom there. They've won, only one of their last eight away games. Drawn two and lost three of their last five since they had that win. The last five matches overall, they've picked up 12 points, which puts them sixth in the form table. Now, Norwich have conceded 54 goals this season. Nobody has conceded more in the top 14 in the table. Stoke, incidentally, have only conceded 50. So they've got a leakier defence than us. Norwich have scored, though, 66 goals. Quite a lot more than we have. Despite an XG of just 50.6, so that plus 15.4 difference is only bettered by Preston North End, and we know what happened to them last weekend. Stoke are catching up their XG, though. It's 35 goals they've scored now against an XG of 41.7. Now, Norwich are one of only two sides with two players on 12 or more goals. This is Josh Sargent and John Lowe. The other team, incidentally, is Stephen Schumacher's old club Plymouth, who have Morgan Whittaker and Tardy, who are also on, at least 12 goals. Stoke's top scorer is Andre Vidigal, who has netted five times a season. Only Rotherham, whose top scorer has four, have a top scorer with less goals than Andre. Midfielder Gabriel Sara has 20 goal involvements, 9 goals and 11 assists, whilst right-back Jack Stacey also has 6 assists this season. So, yeah, seems to be a lot of goals coming from that right-hand side there for Norwich. Gabriel Sara, Kenny McLean and Jack Stacey have all played all 37 games for Norwich, so they're all ever-present. Kiana Hoover and Walter Berger have made the most Stoke appearances, 32 games, which means they've missed 5 matches. Watch out for John Rowe, by the way. I mentioned it before, on 12 goals. His 12 goals come from an XG of just 5.2. So watch out for a John Rowe worldie. He seems to be able to hit them. Jack Stacey, this is interesting. He's put in 9 tackles in the attacking third, which is only better by Sara's 10, whilst left-back McCallum only has 3 tackles out of his defensive third and none in the attacking third. So Jack Stacey really likes to push forward and sort of, gets in and also gets defensively. He's getting involved in that final third of the pitch. Whereas on the opposite wing, they don't seem to do that. So maybe Stoke needs to look at, knocking the ball out to sort of Hoover and that, where he may get that little bit more time on the ball, possibly. Stacey and Sara on the right have put in 355 crosses, which is Hoover 10 per game on average. Whilst McCallum and Sines on the left have put in just 49, which over the matches that they have played averages out at just 2.2 each per game. Kiana Hoover with 106 and Manhoff 13, average 4 per 90 minutes that they've played. Whilst Gooch and Juno have 3.5. So Stoke's sort of attacking presence is a lot sort of closer, whereas Norwich really seem to favour that right-hand side. I think we can be defensively strong down our left, defensively, and maybe we can attack down the right, because that seems to be the way to maybe get at Norwich. Everson now averages 1.33 points per game, the highest of all the Stoke squad, playing a minimum of 4 games. Whilst compared to Bonham and Travers, he also concedes less goals per game, again just 1.33 per game, but has a lower save percentage. His 60 is lower than both Bonham and Travers, who both average 72% and above. Stoke have only beaten Rotherham at home all season, having more possession. So the 6 wins that they've had, only Rotherham was when they had more possession. The games where they have had more possession, other than the Rotherham one, they've drew 2, which were both 0-0 draws, and lost 4. those four defeats, seeing them score twice and concede a whopping 10 goals. So the ball, we don't really want it by the looks of it, do we? It seems to be a hindrance to us. The referee, now brace yourselves, Gavin Ward. Yes, Taylor Hollywood-Bellis, his knee has just flinched. 21 games he's ref this season. He's given 88 yellows, 2 reds, 4 penalties, 14 home wins, though. That's nice and promising. Just a 1 draw and 6 away wins. He's ref Stoke 14 times, given us 15 yellows, 2 reds, 2 penalties, 4 is not against. 4 wins, 4 defeats, and 6 draws. In this season, he ref the 3-1 loss away at Blackburn. And, of course, he is most famous for the Huddersfield away game, where Howard Bellis's leg was nearly taken off, and he decided no further punishment was required. Norwich. Now, they have had him ref their games on 10 occasions. He's given them 21 yellows, 1 red, a penalty 4, a penalty against. But guess this for a record. 8 victories, 1 draw, just the single solitary defeat from their 10 matches. He's ref them this season, 3 games, 3 wins. 2-1 home win against Coventry when he sent off a Coventry player. That was in February. And then last year, he had the 2-1 away win against Bristol City and the 2-0 home win against Birmingham. Yeah, so does he want to give another home win or does he want to go with his favourite Norwich win? We'll even find out. Right, let's have a listen now to some audio. So we have got some audio coming in from the Norwich camp. So let's listen to that. And also, let's listen to the ever-reliable Graham McGarry.
Well, here we go again, you Potters predictors, and you must be looking forward to your next game, having come back from Deepdale last Saturday with an excellent 3 points. And this is a real important game coming up against Norwich City at the weekend, where the fans can play their part, because a win for Stoke and results elsewhere and that Championship league table will be looking really impressive, because they'll be very, very close to a mid-table position. But Norwich themselves are fighting hard to try and make a playoff place by the end of the season. They're coming into this game, of course, in the playoff places, and they seem one of those inconsistent sides. You're never quite sure what Norwich City are going to predict, but it'll be a difficult afternoon. The Potters fans can play their part. Stephen Schumacher's had a good week with his players on the training ground. He's had a couple of results go his way with other clubs playing in the week and not picking up points. So the end of season running is tight, is tense, but it's exciting. And Stoke City fans, you can be on the right end of having an exciting end to the season. 3 points on Saturday will take you a long way to staying in the Championship next season. Stoke City 2, Norwich City 1.
Hello, Stoke fans. Adam Harvey here from the Pinkham podcast. Dan's kindly asked me on the show to share some thoughts from the Norwich City camp heading to the Bet365 Stadium on Saturday for what's a huge clash for both sides. Norwich, of course, got their objectives of trying to push for the top six in the last 9 games. Stoke hoping to stay in the Championship. It's a massive, massive game. And it's been a weird season for Norwich, actually. It was a season that started really, well, superbly well. We were in the top two. Johnny Rowe was scoring goals for fun. Josh Sargent had kind of replaced Timu Pukki after his departure. Started the season superbly before a massive injury that kept him out for about 3 or 4 months. Huge blow for us at that point. Gabriel Zara won Player of the Month. And up to the point we beat you guys 1-0 at Carrow Road, sort of mid-September, it was really rosy, actually. The fans were all on side. They felt like a club that was united. And then it swiftly turned. We had a really horrid run of form, 7 defeats in 9. Tumbled down to 17th in the Championship. No style, no identity, lots of criticism for David Wagner. Rightfully, fans felt it was his time to go and kind of battled against the club, who decided that they're actually going to stick with David Wagner, because we were sort of in transition at that point, where our sporting director, Stuart Webber, or previous sporting director, Stuart Webber now, departed. Ben Napper, who was formerly a loans manager at Arsenal, he arrived, and I think he just wanted to kind of sort of stabilise the ship almost, and he felt David Wagner was the man to take it forward at that point. And to his credit, it's worked out well for us. Josh Sargent returned around the Christmas period, and ever since then, I mean, our form in 2024 has been quite magnificent. Just 2 defeats in the whole of this calendar year so far in the league. One of those at Elland Road against Leeds, so no real shame in that one, given they're unbeaten all season at home. And you know, they look like a side that's probably going to gain automatic promotion back to the Premier League. The other one at Middlesbrough last week, we were actually 1-0 up in that game. Borja Sainz, our wide man, wrongfully sent off, and that changed the game, and it felt like a game we were in control of and probably would have gone on to win. So I think you can almost not include that probably in this run, just given kind of the scenario that played there. So yeah, it's been brilliant. We moved into the top six last Saturday with a 5-0 victory over Rotherham, and heading into the last nine games, it's quite nice to have something to play for, because I think many fans felt at certain points of the season that maybe that wasn't going to be the case. In terms of the style and the approach of this side, it's differed actually throughout the season, really. Start of the campaign, it was a 4-2-3-1. It becomes quite fluid. Norwich can sort of be a 4-4-2 out of possession, and then obviously in possession they throw men forward and kind of the shape changes. But sort of when Wagner was under pressure, he changed it and went five at the back, got lots of criticism, but it got results when we needed them at different points, and more recently sort of back to the 4-2-3-1 that's worked at the start of the season. He's sort of got more players back available. Josh Sargent is huge to what we do in terms of the pressing, and he's such a complete striker that for this system and this team to work, they kind of have to have him. Johnny Rowe's out injured, which has kind of hampered that a little bit, but not massively. I think we've got other options that have come in and done a job. In terms of star player, it's a tricky one. I think it's between Josh Sargent and Gabriel Zara. Josh Sargent, as I mentioned a few times throughout this, his goal ratio at the moment is off the scale. I think he's got the top sort of goals to minutes ratio in the Championship is right up there. 12 goals this season, given he missed about 3 months of the campaign, just shows how good he is. And I think he's a man that's definitely going to get Premier League interest in the summer if Norwich, of course, don't make it back to the promised land. And Gabriel Zara, I mean, you can watch his couple of goals last weekend against Rotherham. He's a step above. 9 goals, 11 assists, so 20 goal contributions from midfield this season. Yeah, it's quite staggering, because given he started every single game, he really feels like he's settled into life in England now. He's Premier League bound as well. Johnny Rowe would have been an option, but of course he's out injured for this weekend, so you've got one less player to worry about there. A breakout season for him, 12 goals, which is quite commendable, really, for a man who's so young. I think it's all set up for a really good game now on Saturday, hoping that Norwich can kind of turn what's been a really poor run away from home. That if you look sort of contrast their home record to their away record, it's sort of off the sort of Richter in terms of difference. Home form, I think they're third in the Championship. Away from home, only 4 wins all season, 18th in the division for away form. So they do struggle on the road, so that probably should give some, you know, any Stoke fans a little bit of confidence. Lost at Middlesbrough a few weeks back away from home. Only a draw at Blackburn away a few weeks back. A draw at QPR not that long ago. So they do struggle away from home against sides that are kind of in that bottom pack of sides that are sort of trying to beat the drop this season. So there's maybe the silver lining for Stoke. But I'm feeling slightly more confident, I think, now. Norwich have got themselves in the top six. They know it's theirs to lose now. So I think that probably adds the extra dimension, and of course Coventry and Hull don't play this weekend, so there's kind of the carrot of trying to push yourselves, well, 3 points clear of Hull, 4 points clear of Coventry then, which, you know, I think at any point, and any fan would tell you, it's kind of the points on the board rather than games in hand that most fans would snap your hand off for. So given all of those sort of permutations, I think I'm just going to back a Norwich City win on Saturday. Going to go for a 2-1 Norwich. Gabriel Zara, Josh Sargent to score. They're kind of the two danger men. But, you know, I'm sure whatever happens, Stoke have got enough quality, I think, probably to stay up this season. Always enjoy my trips to Staffordshire. So fingers crossed if we aren't back in the Premier League, which I think even if we make the playoffs, it doesn't feel very likely that we will be the side that goes up, given, you know, Ipswich, Southampton both having great seasons, or even if Leeds or Leicester drop in, you know, it's probably one of those sides to lose out in the playoff final. So looking forward to it. Hopefully, if we don't meet you next season, best of luck for the rest of this season and seasons moving forward. And looking forward to, of course, a massive game on Saturday, and hopefully for Norwich City, 3 more points.
Cheers for that, Adam. And of course, thank you, Graham, for your thoughts as well. Now, Mike, what are you thinking for this game? I do think it's going to be a tough one. Potentially, for me, the toughest one we've got left this season.
So that's interesting, right? I agree with you. I think it is going to be tough. I still think we've got harder games to come. And by that, I think obviously Southampton will, of course, be harder, but I think it could be the case that the season might be over by then for both teams, potentially. So, it might, again, I guess it depends on the weight that you put behind something like that. I actually think the whole game away is going to be a very, very tough game, potentially tougher than this Norwich one, actually. So I look at this game, mate, and you know what? A few weeks ago, I would have absolutely had us down to being defeated comfortably. It's amazing what a bit of confidence does, isn't it, really? I mean, I know we were on Radio Stoke in the week, and I think you went for a 3-2 win, something like that. I can't remember now. It was something like that.
Still going for a 3-2 win.
3-2 win. You're still going for that? Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, what are your predictions going to be? I went for a 1-1 draw, and I'm going to stick with mine as well. I think it's going to be a really hard-fought game. I think we will take the lead, and I do think Norwich will peg us back. They've got a really good midfield. I think they've got a lot of quality and depth as well. The midfield's really strong. I think Shuey said that himself, actually, I think, today in his press conference. And I think to win this one would be incredible, but I don't think anyone's going to go to that stadium on Saturday and think, right, we've got to win or we should win. I don't think there's any entitlement going into this weekend. But at the same time, I think if we come away with a point, I think that'll be really good going because, again, like we've said, you know, previously, we've picked up a win against Preston. Most people probably wouldn't have had us down to do that. Narrow defeat to Leeds, which on another day, we lose 4-0, we draw 1-1. It was a very weird game. We beat Middlesbrough. Again, another team that some people would have looked at and thought, that's tricky. I know I did originally. But again, we did that quite comfortably. So, you know, we've come up against some quite formidable teams in terms of their form and stuff like that. So I don't think there's any reason to be scared of Norwich, Dan. Not at all. Yes, okay. I think, what, did they beat Rotherham 5-0? I think we mentioned, and look, to be honest with you, I think Port Vale would face Rotherham and have a chance. I don't think that's a measure of anything. But, you know, they had a random loss to Middlesbrough 3-1 as well, which seems to have kick-started Middlesbrough's season again. But nothing to fear out of this one. It'll be a tight game. I'm sticking with 1-1. I still think we've got a team now. We're starting to build confidence. They've got each other's backs. I think Berger's going to be a big miss for us. And I've guessed the key thing for me is how are we going to cope without him there? And if it is Pearson coming back in for him, for example, obviously it's not a natural replacement. So that midfield battle is going to be really, really, I think, important and quite key to the game.
Yeah, I also have sort of thought, you know, how would I go about trying to replace Berger as best as possible? And how will Stephen Schumacher go about it? Because he can be quite inventive, can't he? And regarding his tactics and his, you know, how he sets up. I personally think that one, sort of mentioned in the stats there, and one of the key players for them could be, you know, the wily old fox Ashley Barnes up front. So he's playing where you would normally sort of play a number 10. So he plays off Josh Sargent. But obviously, he's not your traditional number 10, is he? He's not like a James Maddison, you know, those kind of, you know, skillful kind of players that are in that position. He's more of a sort of a battle-hardened, sort of battering ram kind of number 10. Very strange. So what? Very much like, I suppose, Mama Sidibe used to be back in the day for Stoke, isn't he? You could knock the ball up to him. And no offence to Mama, Barnes is probably a little bit more of a goal threat and probably a little bit better if he brings the ball down. But I bet he doesn't run off as much as Mama used to do. So what I would do, in fact, without Berger there, I would actually play it just a two in midfield. I would keep the three centre-backs and I would have McNally in the middle. Now, as the probably the best, most combative of those three centre halves, have him in the middle, and when the ball's going up to Barnes, when we know he's going to be launched either into his head, I would get McNally to go and challenge. But there's probably two ways you can try and deal with somebody like Ashley Barnes. Do you go and really attempt to win those first balls and really engage with them, or do you sort of let him, in a certain way, let him win that ball and make sure that you are there for the second ball, don't you? So I think keep the three at the back. Much people won't want that, three at the back, wing backs. But I think we only play two in midfield. Keep, again, get Juno on one wing, get Manouf on the other, get Ennis down the middle. Baker, Loren, they've got to have legs, they've got to have them. They can maybe drop a little bit deeper than they have. Squeeze that space so you can't get it into, like, say, so there's no balls going into Barnes' feet. Anything in the air, McNally comes and, you know, and challenges with him. And then Wilmot and Rose, when McNally steps forward, they just become more compact and we drop into a back four. Josh Sargent, for me, I think we the stats showed that everything gets played down there right. So for me, we've got to get the ball to Hoover out on the right-hand side. Him and Manhoof, that's got to be our main attacking point, if you like. And Juno's got to know that he's got to be getting back and helping Gooch, because Jack Stacey has proven all season to be a real danger getting forward from right back. Like, say, him and Sarah on the right are far more, they are far more creating chances, creating real goal scoring opportunities, and that's where a lot of the threat comes from. Down the left, the numbers nowhere near the same as they're on the right hand side. So we need to make sure that we're solid down that left, when on our left when we're defending. And I think if we put the ball on the right, we'll have more time, more and more ability to progress our attacks. That's what we need to do. Like I say, McNally for me has got to be looking at, you know, really being really competitive and everything with Barnes.
You know what? You've almost pretty much taken my team away from me. I've got another team. I've got an alternative, right? So I agree with you. I think we probably will stick to the five at the back. I think we'll want that solidity. And I still think that, you know, again, the Gooch kind of player, when we're playing that wing-back formation, I think that's when we see him at his best, when it's a flat-back four, not necessarily. So I agree with you on the five. But what I'm going to do, I did have another team just in case anyway, for the 4-3-3 formation as well. So I had two teams. So I've gone for the back four of Henry, Rose and McNally, and obviously Gooch still in that left-back position. I don't think that is his best role, but to drop him would be ridiculous, I think. He had a really good game. He could still contribute. And I had to really play around with this combination with the midfield, but I'd say Baker, Loren and Juno is the three. So I know Juno's been playing a lot more like a left kind of attacking striker for the vast majority of times. He floats around a bit, but tends to, you know, still keep himself out there. But I want him back in the middle. So I play them as a three. And then I think Ryan May could come back into the fold here. He's going to be very fresh. And I would see May leading the line, Manhoof on the right, and even Ennis on the left. Again, not natural, but I think his pace, his movement, along with Gucci's, you know, kind of inventiveness and ability to get forward and link up play, them two could work actually quite well down that left hand side with each other. So I'd go something like that if we wanted to go down the 4-3-3. I'm not putting Tyrese in. I don't think this is the right game for him. I think you're right. I think the man who's type of, you know, drive and work ethic, I think that's going to very much be key to this. We're going to need fit players. You know, players will run, do some of the dirty stuff, and I think there or thereabouts. But I do agree with you around the team that you're going to go for in the back five.
Yeah, I think for me, I had Ryan May on the bench if available. If not, then it was a toss-up between Wesley and Lowe, to be honest.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Like, it's just interesting, obviously, signs as well. He's typical for us. He got sent off the other week. Red card got rescinded, and then he went and scored a cracker against Rotherham. Like, just typical. Just have a look. We'll probably do another one. But yeah, it is, it's a bit of interesting. So, you know, how are we going to deal with this? I think there's numerous ways you can go about it. I just have a feeling there's going to be goals. I'll be honest. I always said 3-2. I just think that Norwich score plenty. They concede plenty. Since Sargent's come back in the side, obviously they picked up. Away from home, they can be quite fragile. They've proven to that, you know, the full season. Like I say, no win in the last five away games. So, they've 19th in the away table. Like, we're 19th in the home table. I said that. It's like, to be in the top six, it's like really on their home form. And I just, it is interesting to me, you know, how we're going to sort of, how this game's going to pan out. It could go sort of anyway, but I just hope there's going to be a few goals in it and we can come out on top. One stat I'd like to see us sort of banish is the fact that every time we've gone behind this season at home, not once have we got back level. So not even like draw the game, we've never even gone from 1-0 down to 1-1 at any point during a game at home. Yeah. I think that's mental to think that all the opposition have to do is score, get in front, and then that's literally it. That is actually the game over. We don't even give it like a fight, if you like, and get back into it and then lose it. We just actually have at no point got back into a game. So I'd like to see us do that, because I think if we get the whole season without doing that, that is quite tragic.
Yeah, it would be. And again, I think we talk about confidence and just those little things, I think, would really help. And one thing that was crossing my mind about Norwich, they might look, I mean, they've got, what, us and Plymouth next. They may look at this a little bit of, oh, it's only Stoke, oh, it's only Plymouth. This is where we're going to get our 6 points. A little bit of overconfidence, because if you look at their fixtures after it, they've got Leicester, Ipswich, Inform Sheffield Wednesday, and then they've got Preston. Like, forgetting Preston, Leicester, Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday, they will be tough games. And I just think, you know, they're a team that would very quickly disappear from the playoff race if they take these next kind of five or six games lightly. So I do think there's an element of they could just see us as, oh, there, so this will be an easy, you know, easy 3 points. So, I don't think we're going to lose it. I'm not quite with you on the whole winning side. At the same time, I'll definitely take your prediction over mine. I'll tell you what, I'll let you. I don't know where we are on the leaders table now. I can't remember, but if it means you go top by getting that right, I'll take it.
Do you know, I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that me, you, and Graham are all level on the same amount of points in that predictors table.
Wow. It's a bit like me and you on the whole Super Six, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, in a sign of how badly we've been, opposition fans are streaking away at the top of the table. Because obviously they always predict they're going to win.
Yeah, it's an easy one for them this season, isn't it?
Have you got a, you talk about Super Six there, Mark? Have you got a Super Six update for us there?
Oh, I can do. I'll tell you what, I'll start off firstly with what I sent to our group chat earlier. So now, Dan, you made a stupid error and decided not to do it. Well, I say decided, you completely forgot to do it, yes. Your predictions. I picked up, I think it was 18 points, if I'm not mistaken.
When I
looked, yeah, 18 points. Now, that leaves me in 63rd on 343 points, slash joint 62nd as well on 343. Guess where you are, Dan? Well, I know you are, so you know how to answer this. Dan is 61st on 344. There is 1 point in it because Dan forgot to do his Super Six. I forgot twice this season. I think you forgot twice this season now. I think we're quite even, but for 1 point to be in it, we have never been this close, I don't think. Going into this part of the season, a little bit like Stoke being this close to relegation zone. I don't think we've been this close like this now. So Yeah, we're getting close. In terms of the actual whole round, though, Keith Coleman finished top on 21 points. And then you've got myself and about six other people on joint second with 18 points. And then Neil Shaw in eighth. Technically eighth, but joint third on 17. There was a lot of high scorers this week. So many got between, 13 and 16 points. And Daniel kind of joined bottom with a zero. So I'll take the wins wherever I can get them.
That's me.
So Dan, anything else you want to go through? I know we haven't got a quiz this week, but we've got the Would You Rather that a couple of people have sent in. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we go into that?
No, I think apologies on the no quiz for everybody. It's obviously, the trade that I'm working in, it's been a very, very busy week for me with the Cheltenham Festival on. I have not had time to do anything, to be fair. So, apologies on that front. It will be back next week, no doubt. But yes, fire away, Michael. Let's have a Would You Rather.
Okay, so this one's from Jake Ben. He sent this in the other day. Would you rather win the championship via first place comfortably or win the playoff final on penalties? Now, I'll let you go first. I've got my answer, I think, on this one. I'm quite comfortable with my answer, but I'll let you go first.
I would rather win the league comfortably, as I'm a glory hog and, like, believe it or not, as a Stoke fan, do like to win games of football and enjoy winning games of football. And I think if I was to win the league comfortably, maybe even with a record amount of points, that would mean that we won lots of games of football, scoring lots of goals and giving great entertainment and love. And this podcast would be very different tone to what it's been for the majority of the last couple of years.
Well, see, yes, I'm with you on that. I do think, though, even a playoff push, you still, you know, and you still got plenty of excitement. But I just think that the sheer and utter nerves and, you know, it would spoil a little bit of the excitement. And it's fair enough, you know, you're excited when you win on penalties, obviously, because, you know, everyone loves penalties. When you win them, when you lose them, they're the worst thing in the world. Never mind when you're losing in a playoff final. I can't bring myself to choose the playoff final, as much as it would be nice to win in that type of manner. But unless it's absolutely nailed on, which it never is, no, I'm with you. I've got to go for championship via the first place comfortably. I remember when we got promoted, obviously, against Bristol. I'm sure a lot of people listening do. I think it was us, West Brom. We obviously had that Bristol game where Mama scored the couple of goals. Doubled his tally, I think, for the season. That was a good season. We still had loads of fun, and that was automatic promotion, albeit in second place. And, you know, I'd say that that was just as fun as anything else. So, yeah. Jake, thanks for that. I think that's a relatively straightforward one. If anyone's got any others you want to send us as well, you can do either via the Facebook group, the Messenger group, Twitter, or whatever you want. It's very much on there. I do have a couple more, but we're not going to spoil them. I'm going to save them for another week. But I think we come to a conclusion on that one quite well, actually.
Yes, we've got some. Shall we put a poll out? Shall we put a poll out for all the listeners to tell us what they would think, what they would do?
Yeah, can do. Why not?
Yes. And I think we should also put a poll out. Is the championship crap or competitive? the two C's. So is it full of the fact that anyone can beat anyone, and you can have we've had a really poor season, yet everything's so tight and we can still end up with our best finish. Is that because the league is crap, or is it because it's so competitive? We'll put that poll out as well. We'll have a look at what people think.
Okay, yeah, sounds good to me. We'll go with that.
Right, well, back to the Bet365 on Saturday. Not many more trips left this season. Let's hope that this one is a productive one. Three more points on our battle for to stay up for another season in the Championship. This is the last game before the international break. So the next preview podcast will actually yeah, you know, keep. I think we're going to have to put it out on the Thursday because we have to play Hull on Friday, don't we?
Friday the 29th, we absolutely do. Are you going to Hull or are you going to stay at home?
Well, the unfortunate is I am going to actually be working that day. So it's Good Friday. I will be working. I'm off Monday to Thursday. My eldest daughter turns 16 next week, believe it or not. So I, being the fantastic dad that I am, have booked her a few days away in a few days away abroad with her mother. To go and have a bit of a birthday, do whatever, and have a nice relaxing time. So I've got all the other children at home, and then they come back into the country Friday morning, which means I have got to go to work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all day.
Ouch.
To be in a row, yes. So aren't I a nice, kind father? We'll put that on a poll as well. Pick me up and make me feel good.
Take an Easter egg with you, mate. Take an Easter egg. Okay, lovely. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us, mate. Everybody else, enjoy Norwich. Hopefully we'll go into the international break with a win behind us. We will catch you all on the next pod.
Go on, Stoke.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.